The Best of Our Knowledge explores topics on learning, education, and research. Coming up, education officials in New York have proposed a plan to transform the state's high school graduation requirements. Leaders say the focus is to foster true equity in the education system. We'll speak with State Education Commissioner Dr. Betty Rosa. I'm Lucas Willard, host of The Best of Our Knowledge. You're listening to The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. State education officials in New York have unveiled a proposal that would transform the state's graduation requirements. State Education Commissioner Betty Rosa began working on the mission to reimagine graduation requirements in 2019 when she was serving as Regents Chancellor. I sat down with Rosa, a former principal and superintendent, who reflected on her own learning experiences when beginning work on the transformation proposal.
I was 9 years old and had to go through the process of language acquisition, English. And so part of that experience has been part of the fabric, my fabric. And so I know how difficult and how long it takes for a child to really acquire the what I call the deep skills of understanding a language. And it is not a year. It's not two. As most of us know, even with a doctorate as I have from Harvard, if I went to Japan in 3 months, I would not be able to be well-versed in Japanese. So I looked at that, but I also had experience of having been both a teacher, a principal in special education, and I realized the specific issues centered around students with learning disabilities. And so I really wanted to address those issues in this process. And I felt that the way that we were looking at our standards, the way we were looking at the requirement, the expectations, but more importantly, how students demonstrated their knowledge was very confined. And I wanted to expand that into multiple ways of looking at this.
So according to the guidelines, there's two really main goals. One is to create true equity. What do you see as a need for, in particular, when we're talking about true equity, where are we trying to gain ground here?
Well, obviously, as somebody who also has, I've taught many students, I used to teach a doctoral class on what was called looking at the research and applied research for doctoral students. And so what I really found is that we have to use the research and we have to, just like we use the research for science, for medicine, for brain research and so forth and so on. So using that context and using practice together, I wanted to make sure that we were looking at the students and the way the learning opportunities and the way that student learning styles is a body of research that's been done for a long time. And so in our space, a lot of times, while we lean on the research, we don't really truly connect it to the practice. And so in looking at this issue, I wanted to make sure that we looked at language acquisition and that research. We looked at special education and the way students learn, whether it's a student for example, dyslexia, dysgraphia, children that, for example, we make accommodations for deaf students, legally blind, and on and on and on. So I wanted to see all of these issues come into play as not as barriers, but as opportunities, as ways of reaching our children. How do we remove some of those barriers? Because I think that our educational system, in many ways, really responds to a certain group of students, and yet it doesn't do a good job in bringing along some of our students that have a different way of absorbing and learning and demonstrating what they know.
So, Commissioner, before we start speaking about the four main transformations in the plan, can we talk a little bit about the group of stakeholders who came together to actually develop this proposal? And as I understand, there's a wide variety of people who were involved in crafting these proposed guidelines.
Great question. So I think as after the article, we decided, and that was at the time I was in the role as a chancellor, and we decided that it was important to engage our communities, but to engage them in various ways, to engage them in having the conversation, but also to look at the what I call our partners in this space beyond education. So by that, you know, we wanted to make sure we had higher education, people from, you know, different across agency work, like, for example, labor, people from Department of Health, you know, looking at issues of mental health, looking at issues of our children in terms of, from the equity lens, as you said, what are some of the conversations that we can have from superintendents, principals, teachers, people who do this work impact from an advocacy, you know, advocates for children. So we wanted to have different lenses on this topic so that we could, for once and for all, think about not only the whole child or the child, but also the community, the parents, the, you know, opportunities that some children have and others don't, and to really truly have these courageous, deep conversations about our teaching and learning process.
What was the process like in actually getting all of that input from all those different viewpoints in one place?
Well, internally, the first thing we did was develop our own roadmap. Okay, where are we going? What do we want? You know, we had guiding questions. And again, that's using the research to look at our guiding questions. Our guiding questions led us to developing a roadmap. The roadmap led us to, okay, now we're ready to use our guiding questions, which we did publish, to think about the individuals that could and would be willing to engage in these conversations in a very thoughtful process using different ways of engaging them. And by the way, this included our parents and our students, which really was probably our students' voices was probably one of the most exciting pieces of this work. So finally, we put together our roadmap and we decided to do a preliminary kind of task force, you know, conversation, and we did that. From that, we then moved into thinking about engaging with our board. At that time, COVID hit, and we continued to do our work despite the fact that we were dealing with so many issues in that during that COVID timeline. We continued the work, and finally, coming out of COVID, we decided to form the commission, made up of 70-plus people from all over who not only self-nominated, but also we looked at representation. Last summer, if you recall, we had a three-day, what I call, really a deep dive into these issues, small groups, conversations. And little by little, we got to those 12 items.
So, Commissioner, the first transformation on the list is adopting the New York State portrait of a graduate. And there are a number of items that are listed in there, including becoming a global citizen. Can you explain what the portrait is and how is that different than maybe what's currently in place in the current student evaluation system?
So the concept of the portrait of a graduate came from some of the superintendents, some of the educational leaders who had already been engaging, as other states have been looking at this issue of the portrait. So as we were going through this, we wanted to really customize it and make it very much a New York State portrait. And what was interesting as we were going through this, believe it or not, I was going through my portrait as chancellor. So what it did was not only the portrait, but framing it. How do you frame a portrait? And so it was an exciting opportunity to look at with the task force. And we did that for a year. What are those elements? What are those key components of the portrait? And so we compare them, obviously, to other states. We thought about our own internal things, you know, elements that we believe and we value and we want to continue. And so these were the elements that we felt spoke to our state.
And I'll just list those, if you don't mind.
Sure.
There's a number of them, but that is ensuring that students are critical thinkers, mm-hmm. innovative problem solvers, literate across all content areas, culturally competent, socially, emotionally competent, effective communicators, and global citizens. So that's a complex portrait.
Correct. But it's a rich portrait. And it's also a portrait that allows students to apply their knowledge. You know, when we think about critical thinkers, we truly want our kids to innovate. We want them to be inspired. We want them to think about opportunities, possibilities. We want them to be, even when they read journal pieces, media pieces that are out there, we want them to be critical thinkers. And the other part of this, in terms of problem solving, obviously our students are facing, as we know, even thinking about AI, right? They're facing a very, you know, we've always faced a complex society. I think that we're in probably, for our students, growing up in this society, we're probably in a situation that really needs to be addressed through critical thinking, complex, you know, problem solving, not simple problem solving, and really using, empowering them with the tools that they need to truly navigate through this complexity.
So the second transformation on the list, Commissioner, is redefining credits to focus on proficiency rather than the completion of time-based units of study. Would that potentially have any effect on the semester structure of school? Is it a recommendation where students can, quote unquote, graduate out of a current subject if they develop sufficient mastery of the subject material?
This is probably the most exciting part because it has the opportunity to, as you know, our students like to do capstone projects, like to do community service. They like to do, you know, especially when we think about even in the sciences, they want to do long-term projects where they could really do deep dive into some of these content areas, topics that they have to cover. So I think this provides an opportunity, as you said, in some cases it is to opt out. And it's, you know, especially if they can demonstrate that they really have the knowledge that they need in that area. But it also provides them an opportunity to invest in a deeper learning process in an area of interest. And for example, our students who are in the arts allows them to use a portfolio opportunity to enhance their knowledge base.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with New York State Education Commissioner Betty Rosa. Commissioner Rosa, the third transformation on the list is sunsetting diploma assessment requirements, and that includes requiring students no longer pass what we have in New York State, a Regents exam, in order to graduate from high school. This seems to be one of the items that certainly grabbed the most attention. What can you tell me about the thought process behind sunsetting the Regents exams and bringing into the fold a new assessment?
Well, what's interesting is when we talk about the Regents exams are still going to be a component of this, you know, of the composite. So there are students that, if you noticed in this, also you have an advanced designation, right? So there are students that are still, you know, our students are required to still take these exams, right? And I think the difference is, how do we use the variations and the different ways of knowing that they have acquired this? So it isn't just at the end of the school year, giving them an exam and basing their whole determination of graduating on one exam. And in some ways, think about it. You've worked all year long. You've taken quizzes. You've taken midterms. You've taken all kinds. You've done all kinds of projects. You've written work. And then all of a sudden, that particular day, and I'm not saying every child, you may have had either test anxiety or, you know, the AMSCO book that you were using to study, somehow you blanked out, and, you know, whatever happened, and you didn't do well. And that should not be a reflection of all the great work you've done all year long in that moment in time. It's almost like taking a lot of great pictures, and that one picture that you took that didn't look great becomes the one that determines what you look like, right? So I would say that what we're trying to do is maintain, as we're required by the feds, our exams, but also put our exams, our exit exams, the regions, into perspective of the use, the good use of those exams versus making them the, you know, be all end all and in some ways being dismissive of everything else that the students have done all year long or for the last 4 years, particularly in high school. So it's really allowing the Regents exam to be at the table, but not necessarily be the center, take center stage, because in some cases they are a barrier for some children. So what we're trying to do is maintain the integrity of the assessments, but know that we have to look at that composite. And, you know, the example I always use is that when you go to the doctor doesn't just do one exam, right, before they say we're going to need surgery, right? They go through a battery. And so we want to do the same thing. We want to make sure that we are measuring all the elements and that we're coming up with a composite that makes sense.
And that brings us to the fourth transformation, which is moving to one diploma. Right now, currently, there are different diplomas that high school graduates can earn. There's a local diploma, a Regents diploma, advanced Regents diploma, and it all relates to the coursework and the amount of programs a student goes through during their high school career. Mm-hmm. So what's the thinking of moving to the one diploma system? You had mentioned the advanced designation. That's still something that would remain, although it would be endorsement rather than a separate diploma.
Yeah, this was one of my favorites. And I have to say, while I did not let on, this was something for me that really came out of the conversation I had way, way back with a parent to two children. And she said, you know, it's painful to know that one of my kids is going to receive a Regents diploma and the other one's going to get a local diploma. And the mother said, how do I explain this to my kid when most, you know, if I was in another state, they would just receive a New Jersey diploma, not necessarily, you know, this kind of designation. It's confusing when children apply to colleges. They are disadvantaged by it. By the way, and no different than, you know, one of the things that I often ask people is, did you, you know, particularly people who come from outside of New York, did you take the Regents exam? No, we didn't. Okay, but somehow you got into Binghamton. You got into Cornell, right? So somehow, you know, when they looked at that, it wasn't a barrier to, but yet for our children, in many ways, it is. So for me, the single diploma signals that you completed the requirements to receive a diploma. And that diploma should be a New York State diploma. None of this Regents, local, you know, CDOS, you know, and on and on and on. It should be a state diploma with all kinds of designations, all kinds of seals, all kinds of celebrations. And that's probably the direction that I would like to see a New York State diploma be the core and a statement about completion and meeting all the requirements.
So these four transformations have been proposed. What's the road look like for them to actually be implemented?
Sure. Oh, great, great, great question, because that's what we call next steps.
That's the hard part,
right? That's the hard part. That's the hard part where we have to look at investments. That's the hard part where we have to create a timeline, a timetable of the kinds of things we can do right away and those that are going to take much longer. And so we are coming back in November, as you know. We're working through the summer into October, and we have ambassadors out there. As you know, we continue to have our ambassadors, and we've added additional people to continue this good work to begin to give us feedback on what are the consequences, what are the implications for the standards, what are the implications for credits, for what schools are going to look like, for what these seals are going to look like. And also the decisions that, as a former superintendent, I know that I'm thinking about as a superintendent, what are the kinds of decisions that I'm going to have to make and explain to my community as a superintendent. The same thing with school boards, right? The same thing with principals, high school principals. I was a high school principal, so believe me, this is very personal as well. And so all of those issues have to be what I would call discuss, and we have to come up with solutions. We have to come up with strategic planning. We have to create a strategic plan for this endeavor. And we also know that there are going to be unforeseen consequences that we have to grapple with. And so we are prepared to do that. But we're also, you know, this train has left the station. It's on the road. And we hope that by the time the regions look at the timeline and look at what comes next in terms of the implementation, that we're in a good place with our communities.
So do you have a best guess of a target of when it could be implemented, a year, 2 years,
well,
3 years?
Remember that there are different components to
sure.
this. So some of them are some of the issues are going to be implemented sooner than others, which is why the November timeline is critical. Obviously, for example, and I'm going to use one example, the single diploma may take us a little longer, right? The structuring of the looking at the credits and how we really create those opportunities to ensure that students have demonstrated, that's going to take us a bit as well. Now, but there are other things that we've already added, and I'll use that as an example, to the portrait and the composite, like financial literacy, right? That we already started moving down the road on that. And we want to make sure that we grow that very quickly, that our students have an opportunity, both in media literacy and financial literacy, to really begin to engage in that space.
So when it comes to financial literacy, I know that you and the state controller, Tom DiNapoli, I believe, put out a call saying, hey, this is something that the state needs to invest in. Why is this something that you wanted to jump on and be so involved as a part of?
I think as we prepare our students for the unknown, right, we have to do a better job, because a lot of times when they go off on their own, all of a sudden they find themselves in debt. They find themselves making decisions without having these foundational skills to make the kinds of, whether it's borrowing or whether it's investments in buying a car or renting versus buying, or even some of the day-to-day decisions about the kinds of things that they purchase. Even something, we just went through this FAFSA, you know, understanding how to use these available resources to support, your financial landscape. I think what it came out of is I belong to I'm on the board of Puerto Rico has a bankruptcy, and I'm the only female, seven members, and it's called a financial board. And that financial board has taught me so much about, and while I had already an interest in this space, about bankruptcy of an island and investments and the importance of really wrapping your arms around what's affordable, what's available, and how do you plan your finances. And so I want our children, our young adults, to really have an opportunity early on to start to think about their financial investments in their areas of interest, but more importantly, in terms of how they make what I would call wise decisions.
New York is often seen as a trendsetter in a lot of ways on the national stage when it comes to education policy or energy and the environment. Do you see, once fully implemented, this transformation having a ripple effect across the country? Are other states paying attention to what you and your team in New York is doing?
It's already happening. So, as a matter of fact, I have some from outside of New York State, other individuals that are coming to visit. Our team has been engaged with other states, both learning from them and having them learn from us and asking us questions. So I think there's a level of excitement about some of the things we're doing that other states want to not only learn from, but they want to engage with us so that we can share the process we've gone through so that perhaps it can inform their work. And right now, for example, even with something as simple as we're engaged with the Hunt Institute in looking at our dyslexia, we are working with other states. So I think this has generated a lot of excitement and opportunity for, I would call it, statewide conversations.
Commissioner Rosa, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.
This has been The Best of Our Knowledge, episode 1761. The Best of Our Knowledge is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Thanks to associate producer Jody Cowan, the latest on all national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter and our flagship station's website, WAMC.org. Until next time, I'm Lucas Willard.